My name is Kat Catter, and I'm 59 years old. Today is September 5th, 2018.
Sixth,
it is. And I'm speaking with Matt, who is a youth pastor at St. Mark's, and we're recording this interview at Stone Creek Coffee Shop, the new place in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I'm not done with the interview. I want to keep going. So now I finished that. Matt. What advice would you give your teenage self? Now, I am going to just leave this here, and we're going to have a conversation and see how this goes, because I've only done it with high school students.
Okay.
Like, you're going to be a little test subject with an adult.
Awesome. I think the greatest piece of advice I would give my teenage self is to take seriously the advice others give me and not to rely on what I would perceive as my own wisdom or just trying to make my way through the world and figure things out for myself, but to actually take into consideration the wisdom that others have gained through their lives and that they've lovingly dispensed to me, and to actually consider it. Yeah, I wasn't, as a teenager, I was a lot more headstrong and independent, and really just wanted to experience everything for myself and not really listen to anyone else's advice. But if I had, I feel like things would have turned out very differently, or experiences where I struggled might have been easier.
And I'm going to show model here how I'm free to ask follow-up questions, okay?
Oh, of course.
And also I'll say, we are sitting in a coffee shop, so there's background noise.
Mm-hmm.
I used to counsel my students to get to a quiet place, a comfortable place. We don't have that luxury, but we'll see what the quality of the interview is once we listen back to it, and I think we'll survive. But I want to follow up that thought that you wish. I think that idea of listening to advice, can you think, what specific advice did you get that you remember that you didn't follow, that you wish you had?
When I first started college at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, I attended all 4 years in this scholarship house that I lived in. So I was never in a dorm or anything like that. I was in the Chick Evans scholarship house. And so the very first day, we had the executive board, president, and all the other members sat down with us freshmen, my graduating class, and the president told us about his practice of taking what he called Macy Gray days, and I can't remember exactly why he called them that. But essentially, they were days where he would feel that he was kind of flustered or really overworked with school and his job or whatever else was going on during his time in college. And so he would intentionally take a day, if he was starting to feel like that, to just stay at home and just set aside schoolwork for a little time, set aside anything else that might be pressuring on his mind that he was really feeling anxious about, and just take some self-care. Unwind, hang out with friends, or even get some sleep, which is hard to come by, as I'm sure you know, as a college student. And he really gave the advice to us incoming students to take these Macy Gray days if we really felt like we needed them. And during my first semester at the U of I had a hefty course load. I think I had 18 credit hours rather than 15 because I wanted to just get going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was at some point just before midterms where I was really feeling stressed and where I felt like I wasn't performing as strongly as I could in my classes, and I was really tired. I was tired from work, tired from school, tired from being in a new environment, in a new, completely brand new situation. And I think I just really was burning out really quickly, and I really felt like I could have used one of those days, but I didn't. And so during that semester, the overwhelming sensation just kind of grew and grew and grew until I got really sick at the end of the semester. I had some type of, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I really attributed it to a lot of stress, and my doctors thought that it was related as well. And so I really wish I had been able to take those Macy Gray days to kind of take care of myself. And I did, actually, during the rest of my college career, pay more attention to myself in that way. So yeah. That's one example.
Learning the hard way sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's see. Thank you. I'm going to go to a next question. And I do want to point out how the follow-up worked and how that specific story is really an important story.
Yeah.
It's instructive to others who will listen to it and reminds all of us how we need to take time to care for ourselves. In terms of StoryCorps and as an interview point, it's so engaging to have a specific place and person, and I can see you in that scholarship hall and recollect, you know, what it might have been like to hear, to have a bigwig from campus come talk to you. I mean, that was really nice to get some specifics there. So encouraging people to ask for those specific instances, and it wasn't hard.
No.
Just tell me a particular thing if you can think of it, and there will be people say, no, I can't think of anything right now, and that's fine, too. There's no, you don't fail at the interview,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so now I'm going to ask you the next question, and you notice how I'm being kind of awkward. I haven't done this a lot. I'm not a professional radio interviewer, but I have thought through the questions, and so I will continue here. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
I mean, it sounds cliche, but I would say my father. My father, especially when I was a child, he really showed me what it means to kind of sacrifice your own self, your own time, your own energy for the betterment of other people. He's a great example for what I would say is Christ's sacrificial love and how everyday people can display that in everyday circumstances in their own families, with friends. But growing up, my mother was very ill, and she had a brain tumor that developed before my twin brother and I were born, and it left her pretty disabled from functioning in society as regularly as other people would.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled with that and a lot of medical bills, my family wasn't that financially well off. And so my dad would end up working 3 or 4 jobs at a time to support our family. And he wasn't around all that often, but when he was, he absolutely made sure that he spent his free time that wasn't dedicated to work with our family, with his children, with my mother, with all of us together. I remember him coming home from work one day just dead beat tired. And it was very clear that he would have much rather gone to sleep and just really taken care of himself. But he made the decision to rather just take that time and spend it with our family watching. I think we were watching Wheel of Fortune. That was our our little tradition each night. And so he just really wanted to take that time to sacrifice his own rest, his own mental stability, maybe, to share his love with his family. So he's definitely a big influence on me. And that behavior has been really characteristic of him throughout my life, knowing him.
And maybe you hope to emulate that, too. I mean,
I try.
It's hard. It sounds like a hefty thing to live up to. That's amazing. So I'm not going to pursue another. I'm interested, but I'm going to also point out how when I first asked that question, I paused. And there were things going through my head that I could have said to just, you know, spur you on, or maybe somebody who is a positive influence or somebody who's negative influence you learn from. I could have interjected another thing, but I really consciously gave some wait time. Because in our culture, we're so fast and we're so frenetic sometimes. If a teacher asks a question and even gives 5 seconds, it's amazing. 5 seconds feels like forever.
Mm-hmm.
15 seconds feels like eternity. But I didn't count it, but I could go back and listen to it, and I know it felt like I was waiting a while, but I was also like, that's okay. I need to let him really figure out who he's going to say. And I was thinking, actually, most people say their parents. So when you started with my dad, I was like, yep, in my head. But it is, like, it's, I mean, that's who it is. Most people say that, you know, because parents are pretty sacrificial in a lot of cases. So, or not, you know, you could always learn the biggest influence could be a really bad example of a parent, too. Mm-hmm. I know people who've lived amazing lives because they were determined not to be who they deserved.
Yeah.
That's true, too. So anyway, that's me. In a way, I should have gone pretty much close to the straight to the next question, but I'm elaborating. It's a little meta here, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Can you tell me one of your happiest memories? And I'm going to amend it and limit it, in this case, to about St. Mark's, because we are focusing here on experiences at St. Mark's. But one of your happiest, most positive memories at St. Mark's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's still on subject because it incorporates St. Mark's and St. Mark's people, even though I wasn't within the walls of the building.
Yeah, yeah.
It was shortly after I got married, last November, and I was sitting at home with my wife going through the mail. And we received a letter that had St. Mark's address on it, so I was a little confused on what it was, because I figured I'm up here and I'm usually handed things for work, so. But we had opened it up, and it was just a lovely congratulations letter from the vestry of St. Mark's and from parishioners, all with their individual messages that they wanted to write to us and their signature. And at this point, I had only been working at St. Mark's for 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get that outpouring of love and well-wishing from this community that I was very new into being a part of, really, I think, defines the atmosphere of St. Mark's and the attitude of its members to be welcoming, to be inclusive, and to go out of their way to show God's love to other people. And so, opening that letter and just being taken completely by surprise, I think, is one of my happiest memories from St. Mark's.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. What important lessons have your religious or spiritual beliefs taught you, and would you share them to me? Now, that's a hugely broad question.
Yeah.
Certainly to ask somebody who's going into the priesthood. So I'm going to think if I want to... Let me think about that question for a second. In terms of... Because I haven't really asked you some questions as background, and so let me do that first, just a little. And these are the little more not open-ended questions, but like, what faith tradition were you raised in?
So it's getting facts.
Some facts that kind of lead to this question. And I can do it I'm doing it on the spur of the moment. Mm-hmm. So just because it's sitting here on the StoryCorps site as a question doesn't mean I can't modify it in the moment. And it actually, just in terms of, I'm anticipating giving this information first, just gives me context for understanding whatever your response will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, like, some people go through this, I've seen kids do this, where they just do, it's like a checklist, and the interview's over in 5 minutes because they've just gone through a checklist and they haven't given the thought, I guess, of like being invested in actually knowing who this person is. And so, first of all, what faith tradition, if any, were you raised in?
I was raised in the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And I've been a member of the Episcopal Church all my life.
Yep. And so how big was the church you were raised in?
The church I was raised in had about 100 members on the books, and anywhere from 50 to 70 average weekly attendance.
It's kind of small.
Pretty small.
Somewhat. And you went religiously every week?
I did. It was never a requirement, but somewhat of an expectation in my family that we were to go to church. And it was just a habit that really always stuck with me. And just because of other factors of how the church was present in my life, it was where I wanted to be, where I felt most comfortable.
So now I'm going to alter this question somewhat, because okay. I too am was born into the Episcopal Church, and so I want to ask it a little differently. What point did it just get real for you that this isn't just like a habit? This is that you really thought critically about your beliefs. What point in your life did you kind of put it through that filter that's maybe in more adult? Mm-hmm. Or did you? Assuming you did.
No, yeah. It was as a teenager, I and my older siblings as well were all very involved with the diocesan youth ministry in the Episcopal Diocese of Chicago. We had events throughout the year, like events called Happening and yep. New Beginnings and the like. And I was really involved as a participant in my younger teenage years. And then I switched more to a staff role and switching from being ministered to ministering to others. And once I kind of made that transition from one role to another, something just really clicked, where it felt like the work that I was doing in ministry was the work that I ought to be doing and ought to be doing for the rest of my life. And so I really took a church attendance much more seriously then, rather than just something that this is what we do. It's where I feel like I need to be, where I need to spend my, not just Sunday mornings, but where I need to be in community with other people. It's where I belong. And that realization has just brought so many fruits into my life. It really has led me here. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to, I know you only so well. You've listened to sermons, and I've met you, and you're just so pleasant. And I wonder if you have a cynical bone in your body, because you seem not to, which I feel like I'm walking cynicism some days, and that makes me very skeptical of things. So what I'm thinking here is, the Episcopal Church with its... I love the Book of Common Prayer. And I preface this by saying that. And I say, sometimes I think the danger of it, if there is that there is a rote nature. It's just like if you say the same thing over and over and you haven't really processed it. So, and I don't know this answer entirely, certainly for myself, but like how did you start to process that? Because for faith to be real, you can't just be parroting what's on a page.
Yeah.
But, like, how does that work for you? How does the book, maybe that's the way I want to say it, is how does the Book of Common Prayer work for you?
Sure. I love the Book of Common Prayer. I love our liturgies. I love the language we use and the movements we incorporate into our liturgies. I also realize that it's a very real possibility and actuality that it's easy to go into autopilot mode when we're using the prayer book, when we're using the same words week after week after week, the same words as everyone else around us, and saying it in unison at the same time, even with other people across the world, and in a beautiful way that connects all of us together. But it's also really easy to check out and to just go from memory, muscle memory. And I really realized that that is possible when I caught myself doing it. When I caught myself just zoning out, saying the same prayers that I had memorized, relying on muscle memory, saying the same words, doing the same motions. And it really took me from realizing that into kind of naming it and to then respond to that realization by making intentional efforts to reflect on each and every word that I'm saying, both on a Sunday morning or when I go back home, when I leave the church for the day, and just really reflect on those words trying to work through my mind, what am I meaning here? What am I saying? Mm-hmm. What am I meaning? Is that the same as what other people around me are meaning? Is it maybe different? But really just making an intentional effort. And every once in a while, I'll still catch myself zoning out and falling back into muscle memory. And when I do realize that I'm doing that, then I just kind of just pull myself back. And sometimes it's hard to do. When you're daydreaming, sometimes it's hard to realize that you are.
I would say for myself, I'm usually daydreaming and then occasionally tuning in. There's that whole spectrum of practice, right?
And I think there's some ubiquity to that.
There's a lot of that. I mean, and I accept that's going to happen. In fact, that's probably part of the whole experience for me. I hope it's not too rationalizing it to say, but it's sort of like that's one of the beauties of the communal nature of worship, because then maybe somebody else is actually sending the proper, focused intention out there, and I know that's okay. I can come back into it and join it, and that is actually, rather than having to castigate myself, I can just say, oh, that's how that works. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
It is. As I said in my sermon on Sunday, God will still show up.
There, that's true. That was good. That was good. That was a vivid sermon too. I could just see you worrying. I thought, God bless him for caring that much about the service. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so I think that is the last question I posed for. Planned ahead of time, and we're at 23 minutes already.
Oh, wow.
And so I really want to ask you that final question, because we are doing this kind of as a demo, but also if you agree, we can post this interview.
Sure. It's
something to do, and then others could. That's what we actually kind of need to test, is that they can access this.
Yeah.
Right? So what have I not asked you that you would like to share with me? Or with us, because there's a broader audience.
I actually would like to answer this question that you modified in its original form, question of what important lessons have your religious and spiritual beliefs taught you? I will share them with you.
Thank you.
Or it with you. It's a lesson that I learned from my most recent bishop when I was living in Chicago, Bishop Jeffrey D. Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we have diocesan confirmations, and he likes to meet with the confirmands beforehand. And he likes to talk through the baptismal covenant with each of the confirmands, because these are the promises that they're going to make to uphold throughout the rest of their Christian life. So he wants to make sure they know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
If not during confirmation class, at least from him right before they're confirmed. And one of the points that he loves to drive home, and it's a belief that I hold firm in my own faith, is that you cannot be a Christian alone. You can have your own faith, your own beliefs, you can have your own piety, your relationship with God, and however that manifests itself. But if you're doing it by yourself and not with other people, it's not Christian. To be Christian means to live in a community with other people, to experience God with others, to experience joy and sorrows with them, to have literal compassion with them. And I feel that community is something that's so essential, not only to our faith, but for me, it's essential to my own relationship with God. Because if I'm not in relationship with you, then there's no way that I can be in relationship with God. So I think that's a lesson that I would like to share, is that to be a Christian means you have to be around other people.
Beautiful. Is there anything else?
I think that's it.
That's a good way to end this.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.